Good morning. Today's daf in Baba Basra is Lamed Aleph. We are on the towards the bottom of Lamed Amud Beis, and we are going through a number of cases in the Gemara that discuss the question of Cheses Kemoshanim. We know, as we've now been discussing for the last number of days, that if as long as you put together the following ingredients, you're going to acquire land, even though you didn't do a formal kinyan, even though you didn't do kesef shtar chazaka, but as long as you do the following, so then you're going to be able to claim rights and ownership to a land. Number one, you're going to live on the land for 3 years with Edom. Witnesses now are going to testify that you've been on this land for 3 years. Number two, you need a taina. You need an explanation in terms of how you became the owner of the land. You don't have documentation. You don't have proof that this is in fact so. But you have a taina, you have a claim, a legitimate explanation in terms of how it is that you got here. And finally, number three, it has to go unchallenged. The original owner, the Marakama, during those 3 years cannot have challenged your ownership of the land, your purchasing of the land. If he does so during those 3 years, so then that's not going to be, your Shnei Chazakri, the years that you've been there, are not going to count towards your ownership of the land. So, those are the three ingredients necessary in order for you to own the land through Cheskes Kemoshanim. And what we've been discussing since the beginning of the Perek, which starts back on Chav Ches, is various cases in which we're going to basically learn wrinkles and details within the halachas of Cheskes Kemoshanim. Yesterday, we just finished up an incident, an interesting incident, where the person made a claim that I purchased land from you, and I lived here for the 3 years, and the original owner said, who he didn't purchase it from, he says, you know, the guy that you bought it from really is a Goslin and he really stole it from me. To which the purchaser said, yeah, that's interesting, but when I consulted with you, so you told me to buy it from him. So that's interesting that you think you're the original owner, so why would you advise me to buy it from him? But as we saw yesterday in the Gemara, the argument that he advanced is that, yeah, I know I advised you to buy it from him, but that's only because I can't get the land back from him. He stole it from me, and he's just too strong for me. But I could get back the land from you. And although, as we mentioned yesterday, that is obviously not good advice. That's Eitz HaRa'ah. That's not Eitz HaTovah. But nevertheless, so the Gemara says that is a legitimate claim that he can make, as opposed to the Mishnah Ksuvos, which we also mentioned at the end of yesterday's daf, where the Mishnah Ksuvos says is that once you sign off on a shtar mechira, so then you cannot make you basically forfeited any claim you have to the land. And that point in the Mishnah Ksuvos is a machlokus between the Adam and the Chachamim. But the opinion of the Chachamim is that you have forfeited any right you have to the land once you sign on the document. But the Gemara pointed out yesterday that we're going to make a very simple distinction between signing on a document versus just simply saying things. In terms of saying things, so people say things. Again, not advocating it, not condoning it. But people say things. But in terms of signing on a document, once you sign on a document, you really are declaring very clearly that the land is not yours and you have no longer any kind of rights or claims to it whatsoever. We are picking it up right from that point in time. It's the second wide line on Lamed Amud Beis. Hahu. Hahu damele lechavre my bais by ara. So, same starting point as the previous case and the number of previous cases. So we have the challenger. The challenger says, what are you doing over here? I'm the Marakama, I'm the original owner. And that land belongs to me. I'm a lemi. So the occupant says, what do you mean? I bought it from so-and-so, and I've been here for 3 years, unchallenged. So I'm a lemi palnai gazal nahu. So the challenger says, wait 1 second. You know that guy's a Goslin, and he's not really the owner of the land. And so basically you stole from the thief. But you know who the real owner is? The real owner is me. So I'm Arlay. So here he says back to him now, this is the occupier saying to the challenger, the ha isle sahadidasis bortav amrli zavnani ali. So he says, really, well, let me share with you something that's interesting. You know, last night you came over to my house and you offered to buy the land for me. So it's just now a curiosity, isn't it? Meaning somehow you're coming over to me and you're challenging me and you're telling me that I'm not the owner of the land, but in fact you're the owner of the land, and that who I bought the land from was really a thief. And meanwhile, last night, and I have witnesses to this effect, meanwhile, last night you offered to buy the land from me. And now you're coming to court and you're telling me that you really own the land. All this is really curious, isn't it? Amar lei, to which the challenger said, Amina Isvandine. So to which the challenger says, you know what? I was ready to buy the case. Now, what does that mean, buy the case? I've just translated the words literally. It means as follows, as Rashbam explains. Meaning sometimes it is very costly to go into any kind of litigation. And right now, what am I going to do? In other words, I really am the owner of the land, and the land was really stolen from me. So what am I supposed to do right now? I'm supposed to take the goslin to court. But it costs money, it costs time. It's really a pain. I'd rather just simply, and that's what I was trying to do last night, I'd rather just buy it from you and save myself and spare myself all that headache of litigation. It was just easier for me. I really am the owner. I really should be entitled to the land, but sometimes it just cut your losses. It's just better if I would have paid. That's what I was doing last night. That's what I was really offering you. But truth be told, I am the owner, and I'm a Rava Avid Inishes of Indine. And Rava says that is a very legitimate claim. Meaning what the challenger is saying is in fact so. That sometimes people will just simply pay rather than go to litigation. I mean, just think about the number of times, you know, you hear stories or you experienced where you settle. In other words, and why do you want to settle? Because I don't want the headache of having to go through the courtroom, and who knows what's going to happen if we go into the courtroom. So, okay, so I'll just pay. And that's what I was doing last night. I was just really ready, willing to pay. But now, after upon further review, no, I'm going to fight. And Rava says that's legitimate. He can in fact say that.
So he's going to get the land?
No, what he's going to do is he's not going to. No, his offer that he made the previous night to buy it does not forfeit his right to say that he's the owner.
Right.
So
it doesn't mean that he's.
No, it doesn't mean he's going to get the land. It just simply means that he could still claim now he's the owner of the land.
Right.
Okay. How would Amar lechavri my bais b'hayara Amar le mipalnayas v'inei v'achalta shnei chazaka? Again, the same heading as the every other case. So the challenger says, "What are you doing here?" And the occupier says, "What do you mean? I'm the owner. Meaning, I bought it. I bought it from so and so. I've been here for the last 3 years. Meaning, I'm the guy. So Amar le v'hani kita shtara dezavni la minei." Ha'ar Bashni. So the challenger says, well, you know what I have? I have documentation. And my documentation says that I bought the land from so-and-so 4 years ago. So, you say that you've been here for 3 years, but meanwhile, my document that clearly indicates that I am the buyer predates you by 1 year. Because you said you'd be here for Shnei Chazaka, the years of Chazaka. Now, generally speaking, Shnei Chazaka is 3 years. That's the number of years necessary in order to rightfully gain ownership of the land. So when you said Shnei Chazaka, I assume you mean 3 years. But meanwhile, I have a contract that says that I bought the land 4 years ago. So Amar Lei Mitzvah Shnei Chazaka Tla Shnei. So the occupier says, well, that's funny. You see, you thought that when I said Shnei Chazaka, the years of Chazaka, you thought I meant 3 years, which, again, is understandable. But that's not what I meant. All I meant was at least the years of Chazaka. So Tla Shnei Kamina, Shnei Chazaka Tuva Kamina. Truth of the matter is that I've been here for a very long time. I just use the language of Shnei Chazaka just simply to represent a number of years, but truth be told, is I've been here for a very long time. So now, what the occupier is saying is, look, as far as I'm concerned, I'm really the owner of the land. Now you have a shtar, and that obviously is difficult for me, but I'm just telling you that I've been here for a very long time. So I'm a Rava Avidi Inshid Dekar L'Shnei Tuv V'Shnei Chazaka. So once again, Rava is going to support, in this case, the occupier, and Rava is going to say, look, people will say that. People will say that even though it's been more than 3 years, people will simply describe that as Shnei Chazaka. So from that standpoint, that's fair. V'hani Mili, but the Gemara says, but we're going to add one proviso over here. And that is the Achla Sheva Dekadim Chazaka Dahai L'Shtar Dahach. But here's what we're also going to have to say. We're going to have to say that the occupier has been here for at least 7 years, meaning in his claim, he has to have said that he was there for 7 years, and I'm going to get to the Edom in just a moment. But the reason why, what's the significance of the number seven? Because look, the challenger is saying that I bought the land 4 years ago, and he has documentation. So what the occupier now needs is that he needs to precede that by at least 3 years, because once now the challenger is coming and with a shtar in his hand, with documentation in his hand, so what he basically needs to argue is that I'm the previous owner. Now, if the previous ownership can be established by a shtar, so that's great. So then it doesn't matter what distance of dating the occupier's date precedes the challenger's date. If it's just shtar against shtar, we just look at the earlier date and fine. But the occupier doesn't have a shtar. What he has is cheskes gimel shanim. But the cheskes gimel shanim has to be established before the date on the document of the challenger. So that means that if the date on the document of the challenger is 4 years old, that means that he has to at least have been there 3 years prior. 4 plus 3 is 7. So that's what he has to do in order to establish his rightful ownership of the property. Okay, now,
why did the challenger wait 4 years? A normal person is not going to wait 4 years before he starts challenging.
He's got a document. He's got a document. Okay, now, as far as what now he needs to bring forward to say that he was here 7 years ago, so let's take a look at the Rashbam. The Rashbam writes, the last Rashbam on the Amud. Meaning, once he's been there for 3 years, so now he is the rightful owner, and of course, then the original owner obviously then has no right to sell it to anybody else. But if he doesn't have witnesses that it was established that he was there already 7 years ago, so then that's not going to work out. Because now, let's say he was there 6 years ago. I mean, the Gemara is going to make this point in just a second. Let's say he was there only 6 years ago. And now, 2 years into his occupation, now the land was sold. What better way of macha, of rejecting his occupation, is there than taking the land and selling it to somebody else? Clearly then, if he's only been there for 6 years, and somebody has a shtar mechira going back 4 years, clearly that shtar mechira is the repudiation of his occupation. And therefore, clearly, he's not going to be the owner. So, Shemicha mocher b'zeh, ha-machzik l'sof, she'shonim shemach l'acher, v'haya lo l'zeh, li'hizayeh b'shtar l'olam, ashiyosi ha-shtar mi'ad ha-sheni, v'ikirenu. Okay. Anyway, the Rashbam says that there has to be edus, there has to be testimony that he was there already 7 years back. Otherwise, the person who's challenging with a shtar in his hand obviously is going to usurp his rightful claim.
Who sold him the land?
Shtar is a mezuzah.
The original. What do you mean? The original owner. So. The challenge, all right, so the original owner sold it. But if the original owner sold it, let's say now post three years after the occupation, so then what he sold is something that he had no right to sell. Right. Okay. So back to the Gemara. Amar Rav Avida in Shad Kamsa. I'm sorry, we did that. Vanimila Dachla Shevet, the Kadim Chazaka, the High Lishtara, the Hach, Aval Shis, Ein Lacha Machagadol Mizu. We read that in the Rashbam. The Gemara says it's straight out. If he's only been there for 6 years and the challenger's star is 4 years old, so that means that he's only been there for 2 years, but after 2 years, obviously the sale of the land by the original owner, there's no greater challenge to his occupation than the original owner selling it to somebody else after 2 years. Okay. Zeh Omer Shel Avosai. Vizeh Omer Shel Avosai. Now, the Rashbam points out over here that this case over here in question is basically another spin-off of the previous cases as well. One person says to another, what are you doing on my property? And the other one says, what do you mean? I've been here for 3 years, it's gone unchallenged. And now, in this particular scenario, we're now on the very top of Lamed Aleph and Aleph. So here now, each one's position is going to be fortified by another claim. And that is Zeh Omer Shel Avosai v'Zeh Omer Shel Avosai. So one person says it belongs to my forefathers, the other person says it belongs to my forefathers. Okay. Now, hi Isisade de Avasehi va Isisade de Achlashne Chazaka. Now, as far as the challenger is concerned, so what did he do? He brought witnesses that said that the land actually belonged to his father. What did the other person do? The other person brought witnesses that he ate there for 3 years, and he went, and those 3 years went unchallenged. So Amar Rava, I'm sorry, but the second person did not bring witnesses that supported his claim that it belonged to his father. So now basically you have two claims, one supported by testimony, the other one not supported by testimony. And the only thing the occupier was able to do was just simply bring witnesses that he was there for 3 years. But what he did not do is that he did not bring witnesses that he that his fathers owned the land, and that doesn't support the claim that he made. Amar Rabba, ma lo l'shaker, ibay amalei minach zavanti v'achalte shnei chazaka. So Rabba says, well, let's think about this 1 second. I know, this is right, it's not Rava, it's Rabba, right, the Rebbe. The Rashman points that out over here as well. So he says, I know that really the claim that he made in court was not the greatest claim that he could have made. Meaning, he said it belonged to my forefathers. What really he could have claimed, and honestly should have, is, look, the land belonged to your father, that's wonderful, I'm happy for you, but I bought it. And not only did I purchase it, I've lived here for 3 years, and it's kind of in three unchallenged years. So now, what does he have? He has all the ingredients of Cheskas Gemel Shanim. If he would have said that, he has a claim that he bought it from the person. He then was there for 3 years with witnesses that he was there for 3 years, and it was unchallenged for those 3 years. So you basically, this is all what he could have said. Now, he didn't say this, but he could have said this. So what is that called in halacha? That's called amigu. So now that he could have said all that, so Rabbi says, so what I'd like to do now is I'd like to award him the land, the occupier, being that this is all what he could have said. So Amar Lai Abayi, so Abayi says to Rabbah, Mali L'Shaker, B'makom Eidim, Lo Aminan. So he says, now Mali L'Shaker, which is the Gemara's synonymous way of describing amigu, is that, okay, good, he could have said all that. And generally speaking, yes, migu is a very powerful force in halacha. When a person could have made a claim and didn't make that claim, but could have made a more credible claim, so then we believe him on his less credible claim, but that's when there's no counter pressure. Here, you have counter pressure. Not only do you have counter pressure over here, it's going against witnesses. There is testimony being offered by the other litigant saying that the land belonged to his father. So, and we know the general rule, we don't say migu b'makom eidim. That if it's a migu against eidim, eidim is going to trump migu. So Abaye says, so what's going on over here? Now, as Rashman points out himself, like, Rabbah knows this. Meaning, let's also keep in mind, Rabbah's a Rebbe. Meaning, Abaye's a student of Rabbah. So, Rabbah knows this. And eventually, Rabbah's going to capitulate to this point as well. And yes, it's a little bit difficult, admittedly, to understand what was Rabbah trying to offer as an argument to begin with. But okay. But Abaye is right. And we don't say migu b'makom eidim. So, ma'alu l'shaka b'makom eidim lo omrinim. Had amar lei in davascha hi v'zavanta minach. So, now, here comes chapter 2 of the story. In chapter 2 of the story now, the occupier right now, who did not have a good claim to begin with, because his claim was not, I bought it from your father. His original claim was, no, it came from my father. In other words, the original owner said it came from my father, and the occupier said it came from my father. Okay, and yes, it's true, he could have and should have made a better claim, but he didn't. And so now here in chapter 2, Hada Amarlei in. So now what he says is as follows, the Avas Chahi. I'm going to tell you as follows. Really, the truth of the matter is that it was your father's. V'zavanta minach, and I bought it from him. V'ay da'amar lach da'avasi. Now, it's true that originally, earlier today, in the courtroom, I said it belonged to my father. D'samachli Allah ki da'avasi. But you know what? What I was saying was is that I felt so much of an owner as if it came from my father, but I didn't really mean that it came from my father. I really meant that I bought it from your father. That's what I meant. And so what he's trying to do now is sharpen, but modify his position that he stated originally. What he stated originally in of itself was not a good enough argument, but with a little modification and an adjustment of his original position, okay, now it works out a little bit better.
And a stronger claim.
Okay, so now this comes on to the very, very simple question as follows. And the Gemara says, Toin v'chosev v'toin, o ein toin v'chosev v'toin. So basically the question now is as follows. You submit a claim to the courtroom. Can you resubmit a claim? knowing that your first claim is not going to work, and can you then resubmit another claim? Now, let's discuss this in the extremes, and then we're going to be discussing what the middle, which we're at right now. In the extreme,
we had this discussion before.
Right, yeah, in the extreme version, where you submit a claim and then you submit a second claim that has absolutely nothing to do with the first claim, no connection to the first claim, nothing. So then, I think we can all understand, and it's intuitive, that you can't do that. Meaning, if you saw that your first claim is simply ineffective, and then what you do is you offer a second claim which literally has nothing to do with the first claim, so that's ridiculous. You clearly are changing your original claim because you see the first one didn't work. And there is simply nothing to talk about. Meaning, you can't do that. That's the extreme. Where we're at in the Gemara right now is basically modification. I'm not really making any major overhaul to my original claim. I'm just making a small modification. Yes, it's true. We're gonna not take every word I said literally. And yes, we're going to change a little bit of the meaning of what I said. But it's basically a reflection of what I said with a small modification. This is where the Gemara is discussing. This is what the Gemara is debating. So, Ton v'chos v'ton, ain't Ton v'chos v'ton. Ula amar Ton v'chos v'ton. So Ula says, yes, you can. Meaning, when I say yes, you can, and the Gemara is going to make this point very clear, I'm just saying it right now as like an intro, small modifications, small enhancements to that, to your original claim, not a major overhaul. And Nardai amri ain't a Ton v'chos v'ton. And Nardai says, no, you cannot change your original claim at all, not even a small modification. Umode Ula, so the Gemara says, okay. Now here's where Ula is going to agree. Again, now the Gemara is just simply painting the extreme versions. Ula will say as follows. If we're talking now about the occupier. If when he came and he said, no, it belonged to my father, this was his original claim. It belonged to my father and it did not belong to your father. So then at a later point in time, he can't say, oh, no. What I meant is that it belonged to your father, but I bought it from him. Now, that's a major overhaul. Meaning, because his original claim was, he said specifically, it didn't belong to your father. So, at that point in time, you cannot resubmit. Velotan ve'ase me'abrai v'ta'an einuchos v'towin. So my time atan isi agmere. And Ula also will agree as follows. Meaning that if he went into the courtroom and he made a claim, he submitted a claim, and then left the courtroom, came back in, and small modification. Well, even Ula will tell you, no, I'm not accepting that as well. Because, as the Gemara just got done saying, most probably what happened was is that as he left the courtroom, so his uncle came over to him and said,
what are you saying?
Right. Let's go over what you said, and let's go over what you need to say. What you said was no good. Well, here's what you need to say. And then he comes back into the courtroom, and clearly somebody taught him how to modify and adjust his claim. So Ula will say, look, in those two positions, I'm clearly of the opinion that you cannot resubmit your claim. If it goes against what you said previously, or if you left the courtroom and you come back in and now you're modifying, clearly you cheated. Somebody gave you some assistance from the outside. Okay, so we now know where Ula certainly will not allow for a resubmission of claim. So, and Ula will say, I'm sorry, and Nahardai will say as follows, that if the modification was, remember, the original claims was, one person said it belonged to my father, and the other person said it belonged to my father. And then, the one was able to substantiate his claim with witnesses, and the other was not. If you come in and say, look, both of our parents owned it, and my father bought it from your father, even Nahardai would say that's fine. Because you're not even changing your original claim. Meaning, all you're doing now is just adding another detail to the original claim. So under those circumstances, Nardai says, that's fine. That's not a modification. That's just simply another piece of information added to what you already submitted. And even Nardai would say, that's fine. And also, again, here's where Nardai also will admit that this would be fine as well. Let's say you are outside the courtroom, you're not in front of the judges, and basically there's a little bit of banter back and forth between the two litigants. of what do you plan on saying? What do you plan on saying? And you don't show your cards. You kind of hide your cards. And then you go into the courtroom, and then you submit a claim which takes the other litigant by surprise because, hey, he didn't see that coming. Even Nahardai would agree, that's fine. Why is that fine? My time of it inish to law migle tainaisa ella bidina. Because that's normal behavior. Where if a person is going to go into the courtroom, he's not going to reveal every aspect of his claim prior to the courtroom. Meaning, only when he is formally in front of the judges, then is he going to reveal exactly what his strategy was and what his claim is going to be. And so that's not a change of claim, that's not a resubmission of claim. I mean, again, such an obvious point. Meaning, you weren't even in the courtroom when you... When you bantered about, but again, Nahardai is just simply pointing out that's also not considered resubmission of claim. So where do we stand on all this right now? So basically, the extremes are pretty clear. Meaning, if you are saying something that is diametrically opposed to what you originally claimed in the courtroom, we have no dispute. Then that is considered a resubmission of your claim, which you cannot do. And if what you're doing is not even modifying, you're just simply adding a detail, so everyone agrees that you're allowed to do. The only question is basically modification. If you made a claim, and then it requires a small modification. So, and by the way, when I say modification, I mean you are going to have to reinterpret a little bit of that which you said. But it's almost like it's a forgivable mistake, so to say. I said it was my father's. I just meant that I felt like it was like I felt an owner as if it came from my father. So can that happen? So that is the machlokus between Ula and Narda. Amar Amemar Anada Nardai Anus Virli Deton Vichos Vitoin. So Amemar says, despite the fact I'm from Narda, and despite the fact that the general position of Yeshiva Narda is not to make modifications in your claim, I'm of the opinion Amemar says is that you can make these kinds of small modifications in a claim. And the Gemara says, and the halacha is that you can. You are allowed to make a small modification in your original claim so that you can, if necessary, resubmit. But only when I say resubmit, only a small modification, a small adjustment, like the example that we just laid out. Okay. Onward. We are on the bottom of Lamed Alpha Med Aleph. Ze Omer Shalavosai, Ve Ze Omer Shalavosai. Okay. More case studies. One person says it belonged to my father, the other person says it belongs to my father. We are now at a simple stalemate in terms of who the rightful owner of the land is. Each one has claimed that they inherited from their father. Now they both bring witnesses, but one person's witnesses, quite frankly, is better than the other. Because one person's witnesses say that it belonged to his father. Let's call them Reuven Shimon. So Reuven brings in witnesses that said it belonged to his father, and he's been there unchallenged for the last 3 years. Witnesses now come and support Shimon's claim, but the only thing they can say is that Shimon has been there for the last 3 years unchallenged. But they did not bring anything to the effect of that his father actually owned it. Here comes the problem. Now, the problem should hopefully at this point in time be self-evident, but here's the problem. You see, on one hand, Reuven's witnesses are better. Because not only did the Reuven's witnesses say that he was there for the last 3 years, but these same witnesses also said that this land belonged to Reuven's father. Shimon, on the other hand, only has witnesses that he was there for the last 3 years, but nothing to do with his father ever owning the land. So Reuven's witnesses and their testimony is better than Shimon's witnesses and his testimony. The problem, however, is that somebody's lying.
Yeah.
Right. Right. In other words, in the last 3 years, only one of them could have actually lived on the land. So one of the sets of witnesses is lying. Amar Rav Nachman, Uki Achila Labahadi Achila Vuka Ari Becheskes Avosa. So Rav Nachman says, well, here's what I'll do. Right, for those of you, sorry for the poor football references, but basically I do have offsetting penalties over here, so I'll let the testimony of the Shnei Chazaka basically offset one another. There's no way that both of them could have lived in this land for unchallenged for the last 3 years. One of them did, but not both of them. So as far as that aspect of the testimony is concerned, basically it offsets one another, and then what's left is the testimony that Reuven's father owned the land. And that's what I got.
Why don't they say that whoever is on the land right now?
Right.
Who's again?
So let's assume. That's correct. That's an excellent point. Let's assume for the purpose of this discussion that right now the land is in some sort of indeterminate state.
Nobody's on.
Okay, but otherwise, I do like your point, and I think it's very good.
Well, the testimony is thrown out because what?
Well, okay, so with that, that's the aspect the Gemara is going to be focusing on. So, good, that's very good. That's huh? Well, the Mishnah is talking about where each one of them is holding, and each one of them is holding. That means each one has a chazaka, that they have a presumptive ownership of the part that they're holding, and that's why it's going to get split. Over here, like I told Ben, let's just assume right now that the land is in some sort of indeterminate state of who the owner is. No one is actually on the land itself.
Conceptually, relationship with brothers and the father is not a problem.
Okay, right, but again, in this particular case, though that's not the case, in this particular case, each one of them is claiming that they are the rightful owner based on their occupancy and on the fact that their father owned it, but again, only one of them was able to produce witnesses to both of those points. So, Rav Nachman says, basically, here's what we're going to do. As far as the testimony about the last 3 years, it's offsetting testimony, so we'll just throw that out. And I'm only left with the testimony of what one of them, in this case, in my example, Reuven, so his father owned the land, so therefore Rav Nachman's ready to award the land to Reuven. So Amalei Rava, so Rava says, like, what is going on over here? Amalei Rava, ha'idus mucheshesi. So Rava says, these witnesses are contradicting one another. And by virtue of that, somebody's lying. So, how can you accept any aspect of their testimony when you and I know somebody here is lying? So, Amar Leih, so Rav Nachman's response is Nehidi Yitzchakes Bachilasa. Look, I know that they're disagreeing, they're disputing one another regarding the last 3 years. I get that part, but Ba'avasa Mitzchakesh. But nobody's disputing who was the previous owner of the land or who inherited from the father. Only one of the two litigants was able to bring witnesses that said that his father, in fact, owned the land. The other one didn't. So, one aspect of their testimony is negating one another, but the other aspect isn't. And then basically what Rav Nachman is offering as an argument is, so I'll just let the competing testimonies offset one another, and whatever left is left.
Isn't there, but there's six things about that. If one witness is like discredited, then all their testimony is discredited.
All right.
So here, how could you give them partial credit?
Right. So the Rashman points out over here, the top of Laman Alpha Mid Beis, Machisho Zuazu, Be'edus Achas, Kigon, Shnaim Omrim Ploni, Lova, Mi Ploni, Manav Shnaim Achim Echishim, Amrullah, I'm sorry, Lo Lova, Mimenu, Klom Share Be'osa, Yom Shatem Omrim Shalava, Mimenu, Hayan Manu, Alova, Kol Osa Yom, Volava Mishum, Adam Klom, Ove Edis Kazel, Lohi Mina Torah, Hachronim Yosem and Rishonim. So, when it comes to two witnesses who are totally in dispute with one another, so what we refer to classically as Eidim HaMachisha Zedzeh, they contradict one another. So what do we say in terms of halacha? The halacha is we simply don't know which one to believe. Therefore, they cancel each other out. We believe neither. So Ela Be'edus HaZama, the only time that we're going to believe one set of witnesses over another set of witnesses is only by Edom Zomimim. Kigon Shem Edom, Ale Edom Atzmam, Imanu Ayisim Amakum Ploni, Volo Risi Shalava. So when the second set of witnesses say Imanu Ayisim, then and only then are we going to believe one set of witnesses over the other, and then your point is going to be very, very good. Meaning under those circumstances, now that we discredited one, so therefore they're going to be discredited, and the Machlok Trina Bai and Rava in the Gemara Sanhedrin is whether or not it's also going to be Lamafre as well. Over here, however, it's just that we are at a stalemate because we don't know which one to believe. We don't want to know which one not to believe. So basically, we throw everything out. So, where do we stand right now on this case? Very interesting. Machlok between Rav and Rav Nachman. Rav says, look, we know that one of these sets of witnesses is lying. Now, we happen not to know which one. But basically, Rav says, we're just going to have to throw everything out. Meaning because we simply don't know. And Rav Nachman is basically saying, no, we'll do a little bit of surgery. Meaning, yes, on the part that they are contradicting one another, so there, I don't know which one to go with. So on that aspect of their testimony, we're just simply going to be offsetting. But on the other aspect of the testimony, meaning only one of them is saying it belongs to his father, and the other one's not making such a claim, so on that, we'll believe that aspect of the testimony. So Rava basically is saying, once we're suspecting one of them of lying, we have to throw out all their testimony, and Rav Nachman's saying, no, just on the aspect of negation, we'll throw that out. On the other aspect, we'll keep.
This is the same or different mechanism from Pagin and Dibor?
It's similar. It's very similar to the idea of Pagin and Dibor. So, it's very similar. So the Gemara says, Lema Rava Rav Nachman, but booked the Rav Hun, Rav Chisa Kemifel Gideitmar. So the Gemara says, now, this debate between Rav and Rav Nachman seems to basically be parallel with another machlokus between Rav Hun and Rav Chisa. The Gemara introduces us. Ditmar. I have two sets of witnesses that are contradicting one another. Again, it's not Hazama, it's just Hachasha, which means that of these two witnesses, we don't know who's lying. We know one of them is lying because they are saying opposite points of information. One of them is for sure lying. What in this particular case, it's a no-brainer. We don't know what to do. We leave everything in its indeterminate state. Excuse me. But where do we go from here going forward regarding these witnesses? Rav Huna zubab ifni atzma me'ida v'zubab ifni atzma u'me'ida. Rav Huna takes the position, okay, on this case, they're negating one another. On this case, somebody's lying. We don't know who. But I'll tell you what, says Rav Huna. As far as other cases are concerned, both set of witnesses are not to be discredited. We will accept testimony from each set of witnesses in other cases as well, in other cases. So Rav Huna says, basically, I'm able to stomach the idea that somebody's lying over here, even though I don't know who, but in another scenario, they could testify. And Rav Chisda Amar Ba'adi Sa'adi Shakal Amali. And Rav Chisda says, why would we want to get ourselves dirty with these sets of witnesses? Rav Chisda saying, look, somebody's lying over here, and I don't know who, and you're going to want these witnesses to testify in other cases as well? And now again, we don't know who's lying, but one of these sets of witnesses are. And basically, Rav Chisda is saying, I don't want to hear from any of these witnesses ever again. So, but basically now, this machlokus of Rav Huna and Rav Chisda seems to parallel the machlokus, our case of Rav Nachman and Rava. Where Rav Nachman goes even one step further. Rav Nachman is saying, even in this case, I'm ready to hear a little bit of their testimony. The uncontested part of their testimony. So certainly, Rav Nachman seems to be going like Rav Huna, Lema Rav Nachman Damaka Rav Huna Varavaka Rav Chisda. So the Gemara now seems it seems like we have an alignment and a parallel machlokus between Rav Nachman and Rav in our discussion, and Rav Huna and Rav Chisda in a related topic. So the Gemara says, "Aliba Rav Chisda Kuliyam Lo Pligi." So the Gemara says, "Look, if as far as Rav Chisda's position is concerned, there's no dispute. Rav Chisda says somebody's lying. I don't know who it is." But we're done with these witnesses. We're done. And certainly over here, if you were to hear Rav Chisda in our case over here, he would certainly say, this is ridiculous. Meaning, I'm not believing, clearly one of them is lying regarding the last 3 years. I don't want to hear any other testimony they have on this case, period. So the Gemara says, as far as Rav Chisda is concerned, I know what he would say over here. It's clear. Ki pliga liba de Rav Huna. But the Gemara says, but you know what though? I can even hear Rav Huna, in this case over here, siding with Rav and not with Rav Nachman. Why? Because Rav Nachman ka Rav Huna. Now, Rav Nachman will tell you, look, Rav Huna will totally agree with me. But Rava will tell you, no, I can see Rav Huna agreeing with me over here. Ad kan lo kama Rav Huna el aleidus acheres. Because look, what all Rav Huna was saying is that if they were involved in a case where they're disputing another set of witnesses, on that case, they're negated. On any other case, we'll listen to them. But avala oso edus lo. But over here in our case, what are we going to say? If they're negating each other on this case, you want to hear anything else they have to say about the very same case? So basically what the Gemara is arguing is that, at least from Rava's perspective, Rav Huna would agree with me in this particular scenario. Okay, so... Where do we stand right now? in the Gemara. So we have a scenario in which one claims that he owns the land, the other one also makes a claim. Each one of them is bringing witnesses. The witnesses are contesting each other about the last 3 years, but one of them is bringing witnesses that not only was he there for the last 3 years, plus his father owned the land as well. Rav Nachman now says that what we could do is ignore the witnesses on the contested point, and then just accept the testimony that it belonged to one of the fathers. Rava disagrees with him. Rav Chisda certainly disagrees with him. Rav Huna, debatable, but that was Rav Nachman's position. Hadar Aisi Sahade Davasahi. Okay, so this story also has a second chapter. In this second chapter of the story, so the second litigant now brings witnesses that have belonged to his father. Okay, so now what are we going to do? So we have basically more testimony that was advanced to the case. I'm Rav Nachman, ana achtine, ana maskinale. So Rav Nachman says, okay, you know what we're going to have to do now? Look, at the first point where only the testimony, the original testimony was given, where again the witnesses contested one another on the last 3 years, but one of the witnesses said it belonged to his father. So Rav Nachman said, based on that testimony, I awarded it to the one who had witnesses that said it belonged to his father. But now that the other litigant was bringing witnesses at a later point in time, saying it belonged to his father as well, so basically Rav Nachman is going to say, look, I'm going to have to reverse our ruling, and I'm going to have to bring it back to its indeterminate state. Now, what basically just happened over here, Beis Din had to reverse the ruling. Is that a big deal? So generally speaking, yeah, that's a big deal. Meaning that if Beis Din has to reverse rulings, so right, that is degrading to Beis Din. Right? Think about the number of times where you say something and then you had to change your position. So it's embarrassing. It's humiliating. You very very rarely find leadership where they are going to say, look, what I said was wrong. You know what? I take it back. I'm going to reverse myself. Okay, it's degrading. And should Beis Din have to do that? So Rav Nachman is clearly operating with the assumption of, look, it's degrading, but we're going to do it anyway. Lezilusa de Beidina lo cheshinan. We're not worried about the degradation of Beis Din. And even though they're going to have to reverse the ruling, Rav Nachman says, given that there's new evidence, we will allow Beis Din to reverse their rulings. Now, Mesav Rava, Vitim Rav Zira. Okay. And from this point, basically, to the end of today's daf, and into tomorrow's daf, we are going to have the following discussion. Are we going to be a proponent of this idea that Beis Din should reverse the ruling, or no? Now, again, this is such an interesting discussion because think about the case of, under review right now. The case under review right now, more information was offered to the Beis Din. Like, what are they supposed to do? Meaning, they clearly made their first ruling based on the limited information that was given to them. Once new information is provided to them, like, shouldn't it be obvious that they should reverse the ruling? What you clearly see from this discussion of the Gemara is that Zilusa de Beis Din, meaning the integrity and the honor of Beis Din, obviously is something very serious. It's so serious that the Gemara is contemplating right now this idea that even with new information submitted, Beis Din shouldn't keep flip-flopping back and forth. It will make Beis Din look weak. And the Gemara is contemplating the idea that no, Beis Din should not reverse the ruling.
Previous cases, are we assuming that each side only had one set of witnesses?
Yes.
Like,
and when
even the last case where the witnesses come forward and substantiate that the father
owned. Yeah, in other words, in this case over here, was it, at that point I'm not sure about, was it a new set of witnesses who said it belonged to his father? I'm unsure.
But if you let them uphold their decision, and then they realize the decision was wrong.
Right.
That's more detrimental to the betting that cannot be.
Right. I hear your point. I hear your argument. It seems reasonable. But again, the Gemara is obviously, this is a consideration. And so let's begin the discussion today, and it continues into tomorrow's daf. So Mesav Rav Avitim Rav Zera, so the Gemara now is challenging based on the following, Shnayim Omrim Meis, Ushnayim Omrim La Meis. So we have opposing witnesses regarding a woman's husband who went away. Take a look at the Rashi over here. It is the third wide line down. Starts with the second wide line down. Shtayim Omer Meis. The Rashbam starts off. Isha Shalach Bala Medina Sayam. So a woman who her husband went off into onto a journey. Uva Shtayim Va'amar La Meis Balech. Ushtayim Omer La Meis. So two witnesses come back and said, really sorry to report that your husband's dead. Two witnesses come back. Sorry. Another two witnesses come back and say, I don't know what he's talking about. The man's not dead. We saw him. So Inam Ishtayim Omer Nisgarsha Bechai Bala Ve'ina Zekuka Liyavam Ishtayim Omer Lo Nisgarsha Uzekuka Liyavam. Or two witnesses said that there was a divorce. Two witnesses said there was no divorce. So Inam Ikigon Shaya Bala Kayim Ovain Lahatir Lachar Lacher Hare Zelo Sinase Duke Tre Lahade Tre. And so basically now what do we have? It's the same basic idea. We have one witness reporting one thing, another set of witnesses reporting another thing. They offset one another. And so basically what we go back is to the previous position of her status quo. What was the status quo? She was a married woman. So we have a married woman, that's a chazaka. The witnesses are coming, but the witnesses are offsetting one another. So we go back to the position of chazaka, which is that she's a married woman. So let's read the Mishnah. So first and foremost, she should not get married again. She is a married woman because the witnesses offset one another, and we go back to her status quo of being a married woman. Now, if she gets married, bidyeved, obviously, in other words, lechatchila, she should not. But if she got married, so she could be with her new husband. Now, if it bothers you, how in the world even bidyeva can she get married? Again, I turn back to the Rashbam. The Rashbam reviews with us the Gemara in Ksuvos. The Gemara there in Ksuvos asks the obvious question. Anyone who has relations with her is possibly having relations with a married woman. It's a suffix. Eishes ish, and if done b'shogeg, you bring a carbon asham. So in other words, how can we even advocate b'di'evit that she should get married? Umishani, and the Gemara says over there, Amar Shesha Gagon, she neis le'echad me'edah. So the Gemara says that what she did is she married one of the witnesses who testified that her husband died. V'suparchina, and higufa b'asham talui, kaima. So the Gemara says, okay, but she's in a state of being an asham talui, meaning from her perspective, she's in a state of doubt, meaning from the man that she married is clearly of the opinion that her husband's dead. He's testifying that her husband's dead. She did her own investigation, and she concluded that her husband is in fact dead based on her own investigation. Okay, this is a much lengthier discussion in the Gemara Ksuvos over there. In the meantime, however, for our purposes right now, b'di'evit, she got married. Okay. So, what do we do? So, Reb Nachman, Rav Yossi, So, the Tanakhama, the Mishnah says, okay, so, she got married, lo teitzei. Rabbi Menachem, Rav Yossi, amar teitzei. So, and Rabbi Menachem says, no, that even if she got married, Basin's going to tell her to get a divorce. So, Amar Rav Menachem, Rav Yossi, Amasai, Ani Omer Teitzei, Bezman Shabao Edem, Ve'achar Kach Nises. That's only in a case where the witnesses come, and then afterwards she got married. Aval Nises, Ve'achar Kach Bao Edem. However, if, let's say, first she got married, and then the witnesses came and said that your husband's in fact alive, so then she does not need a divorce. Okay, what do you see over here? The once Basin issued a ruling where they received a certain amount of information, meaning the first witnesses came and said, your husband's dead. Okay, so she gets married based on this. And Basin ruled on this based on the certain amount of information they received. And then a second set of witnesses come and said, your husband's not dead, but rather he's alive. So now it's going to require Basin to reverse. And what Rabbi Menachem is saying is that under those circumstances, Basin will not reverse the ruling. So what do you see from that Mishnah Ksuvos? What you see pretty clearly is that despite the fact that Basin has received new information, Basin is not interested in reversing the ruling. So there's a sensitivity that Beis Din should not reverse the rulings. So over here now, the Gemara is challenging Rav Nachman. How can you reverse the ruling based on new evidence that's provided that's going to require Beis Din to reverse the ruling?
The new information at best doesn't reverse the old. It puts it into doubt.
Right.
This is the same or different from Tophet?
It's different, meaning that over here it's really just a question of the integrity of Beis Din. Meaning this is a...
And that for Tophet it's...
In other words, by tfisa, I mean somebody grabs something from somebody.
When Beis Din
can't. Right. There, in the case of tfisa, where it's legitimate, it means that the person has a certain right to it. Over here, Beis Din, it's just a question of whether or not Beis Din is going to reverse a position that they took previously.
To be like evidence that you're going to... overturn the play, like
right, right, correct, correct. Right, it's all right. Good. Now you're speaking my language. Right. In other words, it's not enough evidence to reverse. And Beis Din can right now maintain the position of what they originally posited.
But maybe this is also a case where Ed Echad would work.
Right. In other words, right.
Why would the Gemara pick this case? It's complicated. Where
correct, correct. But over here, the Gemara prefers this particular case because the two witnesses are going to offset one another, bringing us back to status quo.
But Ed Echad was honest on the
word. Ed Echad against two is not going to bring us back to status quo. Okay, whatever. It's just easier to highlight over here this idea that Beis Din will not reverse the ruling. So Amarle Ana Savrila Ma'avid Uvda. Hasha do Usvinan at Vosvin Rav Amnuna Basurya Lo Avdina Bay Uvda. So Rav Nachman says, you know what, I hear you. You're making a good point. And I also heard Rav Hamnuna and Surah make the same exact point. We shouldn't reverse a ruling. So Rav Nachman says, you know what I'm not going to do? I'm not going to reverse my ruling. Now, I'm not going to stop here at this point in time because you got to read this next line. It says, flow, just to watch how wonderfully ironic all this becomes. Nafag avad uvda. Now, immediately after saying, I'm not going to reverse my ruling, what does he then do? He reverses his ruling. After saying he's not going to reverse his ruling. So, mandechaza savar ta'usu biyadei. Now, the observer who's watching Rav Nachman at work in the courtroom is wondering to themselves, like, is he okay? is Rav Nachman all right? In other words, right? He said he wasn't going to reverse his ruling. He heard us on the Mishnah Ksuvos, and Rav Hamnuna made the same point, and we told him not to reverse the ruling, and he said he wasn't going to reverse his ruling, and you know what he then did? He reversed his ruling. Is he okay? But the Gemara says, Velohi. But the Gemara says, but it's not. Rav Nachman made no mistakes, meaning he did reverse his ruling, and it was calculated, and it was conscientious. And the Gemara says, Elamishum detalya bashle ravave. And what he did is, he literally suspended himself on very strong ropes, meaning he had shoulders to rely upon, that one is in fact allowed to reverse the rulings. And what we're going to start tomorrow is the number of Tanayim who clearly are of the position that Beis Din, when offered new information, can and should in fact reverse the rulings. And so Rav Nachman was feeling fine. Okay, and we'll obviously discuss more. Okay, just quickly recap. We discussed more cases today regarding disputes between the original owner of the Marakam and the occupant, and various claims which are in fact allowed to be made. And the big discussion of today's daf is the discussion of, a short discussion in the Gemara today regarding Migu B'Malcham Edim, where I have a Migu, but it's going against Edim, and as the Gemara says all the time, Edim is going to beat out Amigu. And then the big discussion of today's daf is, where can you resubmit a claim? In other words, if you submitted one claim, can you take it back and resubmit another claim? So if it contradicts your original claim, the answer is no. If it adds on another point, the answer is yes. If it's a modification of your original claim, so that's a machlokus between the Amoraim, between Nahardai against Ula, and the Gemara rules like Ula that you can make a small modification of a claim. Now, get exactly what that means, it's hard. I can only tell you the one example that we saw in today's daf, where basically he said it belonged to his father, but what he meant is that he felt so much an owner as if he received it from his father. That is the example that we saw today of a small modification. And then the final thing that we saw today is basically, can I, if I know witnesses are lying, can I accept them in other cases? That's the machlokes between Rav Huna and Rav Chisda. The halacha goes like Rav Huna, you can hear them out in other cases. What about in the very same case? Rav Nachman was ready to hear, was ready to accept their testimony in the very same case, meaning not on the contested portion, but on the other portion of their testimony. That I don't know. To be honest with you, I don't know if that's accepted halacha. But Rav Nachman was ready to hear that. And then the big discussion today is that if Basin receives more information, new information, should they reverse their original ruling? So Rav Nachman did. And tomorrow we're going to start off with how can he do so.